Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, we'll review the eighth album from The National, I Am Easy to Find. But first, we want to talk about a classic album that is not easy to find, De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising.
That's a magic number.
Three.
Yes, it is. It's the magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, they stubbed me, and that's a magic number.
That's right, Jim. And a big part of the reason why this album is unavailable is one oddball sample on one 66-second track called Transmitting Live from Mars.
Écoutez, à midi.
Quelle heure est-il?
Il est midi.
C'est l'heure de déjeuner.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a à manger?
Des saucisses, sans doute.
Greg, one of our favorite recurring segments on Sound Opinions is the classic album dissection, where we dig deep into a record that we've been living with for years that we think is an absolute masterpiece. We've been talking about doing this record, the debut album by De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, for a long time. I should tell you right now that there are many great stories connected to the making of this album. One of the difficulties you, the listener at home, may have is it is not streaming. You cannot purchase it as a digital download. You can buy the CD on the Amazon.com, but this record is hard to find. Mm-hmm. You got to go crate digging and look for the vinyl.
It's really tragic, and I think it speaks to that particular era of hip-hop. What we are catching here, this album came out in 1989, 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul. Three kids from Long Island with another kid from Long Island who was a little bit older, Prince Paul, the producer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people talk about this with reverence, this period in hip-hop, the golden age of hip-hop. I've heard that referred to more than once.
Oh, and not just people. The likes of Chuck D, Afrika Bambaataa, everybody pays homage to this record.
As a music fan, it was an incredible time. I remember collecting the first 12-inch singles from hip-hop in the late 70s, early 80s, and thinking, this is incredible stuff. It reminded me a lot of punk rock. What we saw was a rapid evolution of hip-hop in the next 5 years.
Just clap your hands, everybody. Everybody, clap your hands.
Just clap your hands, everybody.
Make a clap to this.
Into a more sophisticated art form based on sampling. It's important to note that the idea of sampling, it was still a relatively new art form, and you started to see producers working with this idea of pulling little bits and pieces of music from a huge variety of recordings, recontextualizing them, and making them into something new.
Funky.
So when you think about something like Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, or Ultramagnetic MC's Critical Beatdown, or the Jungle Brothers was Straight Out of the Jungle.
Or Beastie Boys' Paul's Boutique.
Paul's Boutique, which came out right around the same time.
They were just wrapping up the Beasties, Paul's Boutique, when they first heard De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising. It almost said, like, why are we going to bother to finish this?
Yeah, their whole reaction was, our record isn't good enough. It doesn't match up to this one. So this record was held in high reverence because it was an artful hip-hop record. It was self-consciously artful in the way it used these samples and the way it put these samples together. So what we saw was a flowering of this art form with 3 Feet High and Rising at the very center of it. The whole discussion about hip-hop seemed to change back then. It was this upstart music that wasn't going to last to something that had real staying power, that had a sense of these records are going to be played 50 years from now and people are going to respect them. But as you said, because of the way sampling has been viewed legally, that whole idea is thrown into question. There's a large issue here. Can a record like 3 Feet High and Rising even be made anymore
We'll get to the whole sample controversy, but let's introduce these fellas first. They all came from around the town of Amityville, home of the Amityville Horror on Long Island. You remember that?
Yep.
You know, Prince Paul, real name Paul Houston, is a DJ for an influential hip-hop group, Stetsasonic. Mm-hmm. He's producer, he's the DJ, he's one of the driving forces.
I got a hug named Sally, and she don't squall or eat pork with a spoon or fork, but I heard that some people don't like the way Sally walks.
And then he meets, through a mutual middle school music teacher, Pacemaster Mace, Vincent Lamont Mason, who's going to become the DJ for De La Soul. He begins, Mace, working with Stetsasonic, and then introduces Paul to his pals. We have Trugoy the Dove, David Jude Jolicoeur.
My name happens to be Trugoy the Dove. Trugoy is yogurt backwards. Yogurt, I enjoy to eat yogurt. I mean, I eat it a lot.
And Pasdnus, Kelvin Mercer.
I'm Pasdnus. You can call me Pas. Pas is backwards for sop, and Danus is backwards for sound. Sop, sound.
If you're getting a sense of high school playfulness here, mm-hmm. I'm glad. These kids were all in high school. Paul said, I met them. They were nerds. I was a nerd. We were all nerds. Paul's a little bit older. He had accomplished a lot with Stetsasonic, a lot being relative. Hip-hop was being born. He'd made an impact in this small but burgeoning music scene. They record a single, essentially on a cassette in the basement, Plug Tunin', and it winds up in the hands of several labels who begin fighting for it.
Prerogative, praise positively, I'm acquitted. Enemies publicly shame my utility. After the battle, their mittens, I'm with it. Simply sue, well moved. Vinyl like glue, transistors are nevermore shown with life. Wind vocal flow brings it all down in ruins. Due to a clue of a naughty noise called Plug Tuning.
De La Soul, in a decision that will have ramifications, decide to sign with Tommy Boy, small but extremely hip label on the hip-hop scene at that point in the late 80s, mainly because Tommy Boy showed the most enthusiasm for them. But business-wise, they didn't quite have their act together. These guys begin recording in the spring of 89. They spend a couple of weeks, and it is essentially a party. All three of them have given interviews, plus Paul, saying, you know, they would walk in each day with a stack of albums under their arms.
Mm-hmm.
These were not albums they went out and crate dug for. These were albums their parents owned, right?
Right. Here's Trugoy back in 1989 talking about the different styles of music they each grew up listening to.
My background influence was my parents listened to a lot of old Western, some jazz, some reggae. May's parents listened to a lot of calypso and a lot of R&B. And Pa's parents listened to a lot of jazz.
And some of them, you know, look at the list. Otis Redding, the Barqués, Steely Dan's, Asia, Johnny Cash. The title, Three Feet High and Rising, comes from one of the guys found Dad had an album by Johnny Cash, 5 Feet High and Rising. They said, oh, well, there's three of us. Let's take that.
Trees, cows and water up past her knees, 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa?
Hall & Oates, Liberace, Billy Joel, Kraftwerk, a snippet of New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia reading the comics, as he famously did over the radio, and a recording of How to Speak French.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All of this and more, so much more, winds up on 3 feet High and Rising. And then they come up with this thematic link, which I'll let you take over. Because, you know, right now, I think the idea of skits in hip-hop, we have long gotten sick of them.
Right.
But nobody had done it.
Well, it starts here, you know. And it was Prince Paul's idea to you know, put together these little interstitial pieces into this recording of these wildly diverse pieces of music. You know, let's do a game show, boys.
Hey, all you kids out there, welcome to 3 Feet High and Rising. I'm going to ask an amount of 4 questions, and you'll try to answer them correctly. Now you out there in the audience can answer along with them. How many feathers are on a Purdue chicken? How many fibers are intertwined in a shredded wheat biscuit? What does touche et lele poo mean? How many times did the Batmobile catch a flat? Now that we know the questions, we'll let the contestants think them over, and we'll return right after these messages.
How many flat tires did the Batmobile get? Right? I mean, they're just goofing around. You get the sense of friends goofing around for the mic. You know, like when kids first get a microphone, that's the story of everybody here in public radio. They first get a microphone and a recorder, and they make their own radio plays. Mm-hmm. That's what it sounds like De La Soul. You know, barely out of high school, they're all doing.
They needed to separate themselves. They understood that there was so much great stuff already happening out there that it was pointless to make another hip-hop record that sounded like anything else that was already out there, because there was classics coming out almost every month, it seemed like, at that time. So they went far afield, and Prince Paul goes, I can work with these guys. I mean, he was the most experienced of the group. He recognized somebody that was creating their own lane. As soon as he heard that first demo for Plug Tunin', he was like, these guys are onto something different. I want to work with them. You know, and Trugoy, on that particular track, talks about the first time around, you didn't quite understand our new style of speak.
The first time around, you didn't quite understand our new style of speak.
Don't worry, we can fix that right now.
So why don't you all just grab your bags?
Come on board, hoist the anchor, we'll be off.
They were self-consciously coming up with a new language. I mean, they were quoting their version of street slang on this record. They were coming up with their own phrases, their own way of turning words around. So it was a very self-conscious effort to make an artful album that was different than everything else out there. You know, you think about the way that Plug Tunin' was put together from a standpoint of the recording. You know, they went deep. You know, that there's a doo-wop record that very few people knew about as sort of a basis for that record. There was this sort of chaotic, playful, abstract, subversive humor to the whole thing.
Answering any offer service, prerogative, praise positively, I'm acquitted. Enemies publicly shame my utility after the battle. Then
let's talk about some of the standout tracks on 3 Feet High and Rising.
What to do when sucker lunatics start digging and chewing? They don't know that the soul don't go for that. Potholes in my lawn, and that goes for my ride.
The one of the early tracks, Potholes in My Lawn. Think about that. Surrealism of that image. You're in the concrete jungle. There are no lawns, only potholes, you know? This is what they're writing about. And there's a yodeling loop in the middle of that
there
song.
Is a yodeling
apropos
loop.
Of nothing other than the fact that it's just funny. It's surreal.
Which leaves my lawn with lawn chew. I think I better plant traces to give clues. Or better yet, call 911. And when they get here, I inform them I'm the plug one of the plug chair and let them realize the reason for concern of the soul. Cause we've come down with a case of potholes.
The track was about the jealousy of the neighbors. These guys were doing something, and their success spawned jealousy. So this is a battle rhyme, but it's a battle rhyme that didn't sound like anybody else's battle rhyme at the time.
Look,
totally original.
I think the key to understanding De La Soul is they were not afraid to be nerds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'd have to wait another 30 years for somebody like Lupe Fiasco to come forward, or very early Kanye West, to take pride in their nerddom and to not be posing. De La Soul got a lot of crap for it right from the beginning from towering figures like KRS-One.
Mm-hmm.
Of Boogie Down Productions. There was a connection there with Stetsasonic. You know, what is this hippie crap? The Daisy Age is what De La Soul proclaimed. Da inner sound, y'all, right? But they were kids, Greg. What about the magic number? You know, they grew up with a bowl of sugary cereal in front of the television watching Schoolhouse Rocks.
Right.
And, you know, 3 is a magic number is one of the best of the mathematic, arithmetic Schoolhouse Rock songs.
A man and a woman had a little baby. Yes, they did. They had 3 in the family.
and they're happily sampling it. I don't think they're doing it as shtick. I think they're doing it as, this is where we come from.
Yeah, this is who we are.
This is who we are.
That's a magic number. Yes,
three.
It is. It's the magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, they stubbed me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music, racing three parts. Casually see, but don't do like a soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Bruce.
You know, even the Jennifer Taught Me is sort of a, it's built on this whole cliche, you know, the schoolboy crush and I'm gonna seduce the prettiest girl in the school.
Oh, breakfast, broken fast. She was in my English class. Ask for notes, rock my boat, Jennifer.
Oh!
Jenny lost her favorite penny, so I gave her a dollar. She kissed me
and I hollered.
But he's not cool, because Jennifer,
no,
at the end of the interlude, moves on. She's dumped this guy already, realized he's not cool enough for me, and they're just kind of like, okay, you know.
Yeah, right.
I had my moment in the sun, and now it's over. My 15 minutes of fame are up. Jennifer doesn't want me anymore. And then there's that ridiculous, but nonetheless, apropos, chopsticks interlude, the Liberace chopstick interlude in the middle of that song, you know, that just kind of breaks everything up. And you go, what? Where did that come from?
Listen.
Hey, look at little Darwin.
Look at him go, look at him go.
At the same time, though, it needs to be pointed out that these guys were smart. Wasn't just all jokes. It wasn't all about, let's talk about our misadventures as high school nerds. When you think about a track like Tread Water, just look at the lyric sheet alone. You don't even need music to sort of get the idea that this is an elaborate fable they are creating here. It's not a tossed off piece of work. It's really a fable about ecological disaster.
I was walking on the water when I saw a crocodile. He had daisies in his hat, so I stopped him for a while. He delivered me a message, a massage to soothe my stage. What it was more than plugger, dosage more than Daisy A's.
You've got this whole idea of a talking fish, you know, in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And you've got the talking crocodile with daisies in his hat on Dove's Journey Across the River. And the monkey who's talking at the end of the record is a fan saying, you know, you've uplifted me with this record. And he advises Pastanus to stay the course. Don't be swayed by what people say you are. Be who you are. It was almost like they were advising themselves that, you know, people are going to misinterpret this hippie thing, this Daisy Age thing, and they're going to cast us as a bunch of softies and outsiders and people who don't know what they're doing, that don't belong in hip-hop. And he says, you know what? Don't listen to them. Be who you are.
Well, that's exactly what happens. I wanted to mention one more song before we get to the sad denouement of this record. You know, they sample Hall & Oates' I Can't Go For That.
Yeah.
And in De La Soul's hands, it becomes Say No Go. Which is anti-drug, right? One of the least cool things that's happening in hip-hop at that time. We have not yet, or we're just about to have, the explosion of West Coast gangster rap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, innumerable tales about drug dealing. We've had some of that at that point in New York. You know, it's going to become the endless trope in hip-hop forever. After a short break, we'll dig into the story of the breakout hit from 3 Feet High and Rising, Me, Myself, and I. We'll also explore how the album's 200 samples set the stage for a decades-long legal battle that impacted the sound of hip-hop for years to come. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.